Morning, everybody. All right, for the message this morning. It's a great feeling when you get victory after a long suffering wait. Do you remember this moment? I think it's the video. A great moment. We love it when our sports teams win. It's even better when an evil empire comes crashing down. Some of you are old enough to remember when that happened. It was great when the Berlin Wall came down. The problem is with what comes after the victory. After the Cubs won the World Series, Chicago was on cloud nine for a few days. Then the very next week came the election of 2016, and that was the end of cloud nine. For most Chicagoans, instead of a glorious hereafter, we have a country more divided than since the Civil War. After the Berlin Wall fell and the Soviet Union fell apart, we thought it would be a wonderful future with us as the only remaining superpower. Instead, we're more insecure than ever, with more enemies than we had before. So a great victory is not enough. You got to have a good what comes after. It's not enough to have a great win if we're still living in the same old world. Today, we finish our series called Eating Well with the last two chapters in the Bible from the book we call Revelation. And I'm calling this one When All Things Are Made New. Now, an interesting thing is kind of tucked away as we've read through the book of Revelation, because if you've been reading with us, you might have noticed that basically there are seven major scenes, like seven sort of scenes that the in the vision that John sees. So any Jewish reader knows, you know, seven, that's the perfect number. So that should be the end of the story. But here we come to chapters 21 and 22, and there's another scene. An eighth scene. Well, how does that fit? Well, think about it this way. There are 7 days in a week. The seventh day is the Sabbath day. But Jesus, the Messiah, was crucified on the sixth day. Then came the seventh day of Sabbath, a day of resting and reflection. But on the next day, the eighth day, if you will, Jesus was raised in glory. So this eighth scene is like pointing to resurrection, to the resurrection day, to new life. And there's something more here. Because in this book of Revelation, each of the seven scenes has seven sections. That makes 49 sections. And what comes after 49? Well, any reader who knew the Old Testament would know that God had commanded the people of Israel to celebrate a Sabbath year every 7 years. In the Sabbath year, there was to be no work, no sowing, no reaping. It was like a holiday all year long for everybody. Sounds like a great idea. You lived off of what you had saved up. But after the seven of those 7 years, seven of those weeks of years, that is, after 49 years, there was to become a special year that was more than just a Sabbath year. It's called the year of Jubilee. In the year of Jubilee, everything was figuratively made new. If you were in debt, all your debts were canceled. Just like that. All wiped out. It's the year of Jubilee. If you were a slave, you were set free. If you were in prison, you were set free. Didn't matter how much of your sentence was left. All the land went back to its original owners, which had been evenly distributed between all the people. Which is to say, there's a big reset where all the wealth gets redistributed equally once again. In other words, it's the year when everything is made new. As far as we know, the people of Israel never actually celebrated the year of Jubilee. But now, the writer of Revelation is going to pick it up again because he's about to show us what the real year of Jubilee is all about. So when we get to chapter 21 and 22, it's not only resurrection time, it's Jubilee time. Now, after the last battle comes the glorious climax of history. Just before these final chapters, we've seen the great corrupting world system that is a city, that is a woman called Babylon, cast down. Bill preached about that last week. Then the priest and the serpent called Satan or the devil are destroyed, and the whole universe is filled with hallelujahs to God. And it goes on for almost a whole chapter of just hallelujah. That is a fantastic celebration. You think the Cubs was a great celebration? Nothing compared to the fall of Satan. And it's coming. It's coming, folks. Right now, we may be struggling against all the power and might of a corrupt world system and evil spiritual powers. Right now, we struggle with brokenness and rebellion all around. Right now, we struggle with oppression and injustice. Right now, we are even struggling with our own selfish and evil desires, but it won't always be this way. One day, God is going to say, enough, and then all our enemies will be destroyed. We're talking about the destruction of the murder of the whole human race, the one who brought death and sin into the world. What a day of celebration that will be. But that is not the end. There's a what comes after. Something wonderful is coming after that, something that will make the world completely and totally new. Let's look. Revelation chapter 21. Start reading in verse 4. Verse 1 to verse 4. I saw a new heaven and a new earth, because the first heaven and earth had disappeared and the sea was gone. And then I saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down from God out of heaven, dressed like a bride ready for her husband. I heard a loud voice from the throne say, God lives with humans. God will make his home with them, and they will be his people. God himself will be with them and be their God. He will wipe every tear from their eyes. There won't be any more death. There won't be any grief, crying, or pain, because the first things have disappeared. Verse 9. One of the seven angels who had the seven bowls full of the last seven plagues came to me and said, come, I'll show you the bride, the wife of the Lamb. And he carried me by his power away to a large high mountain, and he showed me the holy city, Jerusalem, coming down from God out of heaven. It had the glory of God. Its light was like a valuable gem, like gray quartz, as clear as crystal. It had a large high wall with 12 gates, and 12 angels were at the gates. The names of the 12 tribes of Israel were written on the gates. And there were three gates on the east, three gates on the north, three gates on the south, and three on the west. The wall of the city had 12 foundations. The 12 names of the 12 apostles of the Lamb were written on them. And the angel who was talking to me had a gold measuring stick to measure the city, its gates, and its wall. The city was square. It was as wide as it was long, and he measured the city with the stick. It was 12,000 stadia long. Its length, width, and height were the same. He measured its wall according to human measurement, which the angel was using. It was 144 cubits. Its wall was made of gray quartz. The city was made of pure gold, as clear as glass. The foundations of the city wall were beautifully decorated with all kinds of gems. The first foundation was gray quartz, the second sapphire, the third agate, the fourth emerald, the fifth onyx, the sixth red quartz, the seventh yellow quartz, the eighth beryl, the ninth topaz, the tenth green quartz, the 11th jacinth, and the 12th amethyst. And the 12 gates were 12 pearls, and each gate was made of one pearl. The street of the city was made of pure gold, as clear as glass. I did not see any temple in it, because the Lord God Almighty and the Lamb are its temple. The city doesn't need any sun or moon to give it light, because the glory of God gave it light. The Lamb was its lamp. The nations will walk in its light, and the kings of the earth will bring their glory into it. Its gates will be open all day. They will never close, because there won't be any night there. They will bring the glory and wealth of the nations into the holy city. Nothing unclean, no one who does anything detestable, and no liars will ever enter it. Only those whose names are written in the Lamb's Book of Life will enter it. Chapter 22, verse 1. And the angel showed me a river filled with the water of life, as clear as crystal. It was flowing from the throne of God and the Lamb. Between the street of the city and the river, there was a tree of life visible from both sides. It produced 12 kinds of fruit. Each month had its own fruit. The leaves of the tree will heal the nations. There will no longer be any curse. The throne of God and the Lamb will be in the city. His servants will worship him and see his face. His name will be on their foreheads. There will be no more night. They will not need any light from lamps or the sun, because the Lord God will shine on them, and they will rule as kings forever and ever. So there's this great victory when all of God's enemies and all of our enemies are destroyed. And what comes after? It's the New Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven, coming down to earth. And so heaven and earth are joined as one. And in the New Jerusalem, there will be a whole new kind of existence. But it's not a place. It's not the old Jerusalem that we know about. You can't, like, you know, travel over there, you know, to what we call the Holy Land and find it. It's not that. It's something new, something from heaven, not from earth. And here's the surprise. The New Jerusalem is a city that is a woman who is a people. As the fallen and rebellious world system was portrayed as a city who was a woman, the whore, Babylon, now we have a city who is a bride, who is a people, the people of God. And who are the people of God? It's us. It's us. What is God's great surprise at the very end of time? After all the enemies have been destroyed, what comes down from heaven as part of making heaven join to earth and making all things new? It's us. The church. Not the church as we know it now, but a church perfected. But it is us. When the last battle is won, when Satan is destroyed, God will make all things new in heaven and on earth through Jesus and his bride, the church. That is where history is going. This is how it all ends. The church of Jesus, folks, is not going to fade away into quiet irrelevance. It's not going to disappear. It's not going to be crushed by those who oppose it. No, in the end, God's church will prevail over all her enemies, internal and external. So don't give up in the midst of our present troubles. Don't give in to the world system saying, well, it doesn't make any difference. Don't give in to despair and cynicism or apathy and selfishness. No, we're going to win in the end. We're going to win. You know, in the opening months of World War II, the Nazi armies had overrun the European continent. Only the island of Britain remained to oppose them. They had a small army that wasn't much good because they'd lost almost all their weapons and equipment in France. It was broke, alone, with no allies. The United States was determined to stay neutral. Most thought the cause of democracy and freedom in Europe was lost. People said, you should make a deal with Hitler. And he threatened to invade, hoping to force them to make a negotiated surrender. But they refused. They determined to fight on in any and every way, no matter how outnumbered and outgunned they were. And in the end, they won. And that's an object lesson for us. It's not how the war begins that matters, but how it ends. It's not how it begins, but how it ends. And what God is doing here is pulling back the covers and telling us, this is how it ends, folks. It may seem like Babylon is winning, that the world system of oppression is winning, but it's not going to last. In the end, we win. So stay on course. Hang on to Jesus. Keep letting your light shine. Keep trusting in him because it won't be in vain. In the end, when Jesus returns, it will be worth it all. Right now, in the meantime, they can kill us, but they can't hurt us. They may accuse us falsely, but they can't stop us because we belong to Jesus. And he is going to win in the end. And every time we come together and we worship Jesus like we are this morning, we are proclaiming to the universe that we will not give up. Every time we come together and we're worshiping Jesus and lifting him up, we're proclaiming to the universe that Jesus is king and he will win. When we come together, we are preparing for a glorious future that's being prepared right now in heaven for us. So let's give ourselves to pursuing our destiny with all our heart and all our strength and all our mind. The glories, then, of the New Jerusalem, he outlines. He takes pain to kind of paint this picture of the New Jerusalem. First of all, it's filled with God's presence. The loud voice proclaims, God will make his home with them and they will be his people. God himself will be with them and be their God. And this is the first and most defining characteristic of the New Jerusalem, the presence of God. And he comes back to this again and again and again. God is there. But you say, isn't God everywhere already? Isn't God with us already? Well, yes. But there's another sense in which the presence of God will be there. And it's kind of interesting. This is where the measurements of the city become important. Because if you follow along with the picture, it turns out that the city is a massive perfect cube. It's three-dimensional, and it's a perfect cube. Now, where before in the Bible has there been a perfect cube that was important? Well, the perfect cube was found in the tabernacle of Moses and also in the temple of Jerusalem. The perfect cube was a room known as the Holy of Holies. This is the place where no man could enter and live, save for the high priest once a year. This is the place where the presence and glory of God was manifested in power and majesty. It was the place where Moses talked to him face to face. It's the presence of God in capital letters. It's the manifest presence of God, the glory of God, the overpowering glory of God with nothing in between. And the new Jerusalem will be in its entirety the new Holy of Holies. That's why there's no temple. Because the Holy of Holies is the whole city, the new place where the glorious presence of God could be found. I have experienced some little tiny tastes of the presence of God manifested in my life, and it was enough to leave me shaking and thinking I would surely die. To have this presence of God is the deepest desire of our hearts, whether we realize it or not. And one day, it will be our home, and we will be with him forever. Second, the New Jerusalem will be filled with glory, beauty, and light. He uses all the imagery he can find, all the most beautiful things he can describe to describe the beauty and the glory and the light of it. You know, streets paved with gold and, you know, all kinds of, you know, beautiful, precious stones and so forth. There's no need for sun or moon because there's this greater light that fills the city. It's just like, it's going to be beautiful. It's going to be beauty beyond anything you've ever seen. Third, it will be completely pure. You know, you can read this and think, well, that leaves me out because I'm not that perfect. But no, that's not what it's saying. It's saying you will be perfected. You will be there. All the church of Jesus will be there, but it will be the church washed and perfected. It will be the church made new. No more conflicts, no more divisions, no more failed leaders, no more half-hearted people. It will be the church as we all wish it could be. A church worthy of Jesus. Fourth, it will be completely united and secure. The description of the walls and the gates of the city make it clear that the New Jerusalem will be a city united. It will have the foundations of the 12 tribes of Israel and the 12 apostles of Jesus, which is to say, both Jews and non-Jews united in one united and holy city and people of God. There they will be secure from all attack because there will be no enemies left to attack them. Fifth, the kings and the wealth of all the nations will be at her service. Before, the kings and the wealth of the nations was used against God and his people. But in the New Jerusalem, they will bring all their gifts to the city, to the people of God. All the goodness of creation will be brought there. Sixth, there'll be supernatural life and healing to be found in her. The river of life and the tree of life will be there. The leaves that will be for the healing of the nations and all that is sick and all that is broken, all that is divided will be healed. And this supernatural life will be right in the middle of the city, there for everybody. And in her, number seven, in her the curse will be removed forever. The curse that started in the garden, the curse that Satan brought through Adam, will be no more. God will wipe away every tear and every sorrow, and death will be no more. Even the curse on creation will be removed, creation itself made new. And we who are a part of the New Jerusalem, the bride of Christ, the church, will reign on earth as kings forever. The band can start making their way back up here. These are the glories that await those who are faithful to the end. A woman named Charlotta Green wrote a sort of a prayer from the Africana worship book about this, and I wanted to just share it with you. One day in the New Jerusalem, we shall all walk in peace. There shall be joy, unspeakable joy. No longer shall there be weeping or wailing, nor shall we bury our daughters and sons prematurely. In the New Jerusalem, we will not labor in vain. No more shall we plant and not eat of the fruit of our hands. No more shall we build only to have another inhabit our dwelling. No more shall we be oppressed because of class, color, or gender. In the New Jerusalem, our enemies will be our friends. Rise up, children of the Most High God, see what is to come. Hold this promise in your heart. We shall toil and not see the benefits for a while, but one day God shall come for us and bring us into the new city where we may rest from our present angst and find true communion with the Creator and all creation. And as the final scene wraps up, we hear Jesus twice say, "I am coming soon. I'm coming soon." So hang on. Hang on, stay in there, keep fighting, because Jesus is coming soon, and then we will see all things made new. That's our hope. That's our destiny. Turn your life completely and totally over to Jesus, and you can be a part of it. Let's stand and respond to God in song.